There's a medrash that says the following: Hadugdoyim nosnu reyach, yapsocheinu kon negodim, chadoshim gam yishonim, dodi tzofanti loch. That's a pasuk in Shir Hashirim. That the Dudoyim, one second, we'll see what they were, gave out their nice aroma, and on our doorway is all dainty things, old, new and old, chadoshim gam yishonim, dodi tzofanti loch, my beloved, I have hidden away for you, or whatever. That's the pasuk. So the Medrash says like this: Hadudoyim nosnu reyach, ze Ruvein shehitzel es Yosef. Ruvein tried to save Yosef. That is referred to by Hadudoyim nosnu reyach. The Alp Socheinu kol negodim ze ner Chanukah. Chadoshim gam yishonim, both new things and old things. The new Torah, the mitzvah of Chanukah, and the old one, the other mitzvahs. So the few questions here. I understand why Hadudoyim refers to Ruvein, because Ruvein was the one in 2 weeks ago, Sedra, that brought the Dudoyim to his mother. Okay, what are Dudoyim? Dudoyim are plants that have a above the ground flowers that smell very nicely. Some translated jasmine, but it's more like ginseng. The root, the Mefarshim say, is a fertility drug, and it looks like a human being. I think ginseng is like that. The root looks like a little person, and it's very therapeutic. So this, whatever it is, whatever the plant is, you have any idea as a druggist? The root like looks like a little person, and it's a fertility drug, and the top gives out a nice aroma. So Hadudoyim refers to Ruvain. But why does it refer to Ruvain who saved Yosef? It should have said that's Ruvain who brought the Dudoyim to his mother. That's a different episode in the Torah. Where in the world do we see that this refers to Ruvain who brought the Dudoyim and also tried to save Yosef? Where's saving Yosef hinted to over here? One question. Second question is, what does all of that have to do with Chanukah? You, Ruvain, very nicely brought the Dudoyim, tried to save Yosef, but where in the world does Chanukah get mixed in with all of that? So, a few different pshatim, but what's nogeya to this Mishil Sesharim is the following. We've been learning the Mida of Chasidus. The Mishil Sesharim says that Chasidus is where you do God's will and not just His commands. That is, you want to make God happy. Right? You want to do what He wants you to do. Not to make Him happy for His sake, to make Him happy because He's happy when you're doing what you really should be doing. That was what makes the Yismach Hashem b'ma'asav. God is happy when His creations fulfill their purpose. So you want to make the Ribbono Shel Olam happy. That is a chassid. And if you remember, the Mesillas Yesharim, when he started speaking about chassidus, gave an example. You have two sons or daughters, right? And one of them is a tzaddik and one's a chassid. And the father says, could you bring me a drink of water? Now the tzaddik says, father said, give him a drink of water, get him a drink of water, finished. The chassid says, I know that my father's thirsty. And really he likes beer better than water. He doesn't want to bother me to have to go and schlep and get him beer, right? He just doesn't want to matriach me, so he said the water. The water will quench his thirst, but that's not really what he wants. So the chassid goes and brings the father the beer. Okay? No, because he knows for sure that that's what the father would really like, but he doesn't want to bother him. Okay? If he didn't know for sure, then if the father says water, give me water, he doesn't want beer right now. Right? He wants to take a pill, he doesn't want to take it with beer or whatever. But the child knows for sure that that is the father's will. Even though the father's command was water, he brings him beer. A tzaddik does what he's told. And a chassid listens to what he's told and understands what the deeper will is represented by that command. That's the Mesillas Yesharim that we've been learning until now. That's chassidus. That is the difference between not only a tzaddik and a chassid, but a person who serves the Ribbono Shel Olam as an eved. He does what his master tells him to do. If he can get away with it, he won't do anything. Right? He's more happy that he doesn't do anything for the master. But he's an Eved, so if the master tells him to do it, he has to do it. And a child that wants to make his parents happy, a good child wants to make his parents happy, wants to see the smile on their face or whatever, he wants that relationship. So a child does ratzon of the parent, and a Eved does the command of the Adam. And that's what Chazal say, that bizman she'osim ritzono shel makom nikra'im banim. When Klal Yisrael are doing ratzon Hashem, the will of God, they're called banim Hashem. She'osim ritzono shel makom, when they're not doing ratzon Hashem, but they're doing only mitzvah Hashem, then they're called avadim. Eved does what he's told to do. It's proof that that's what it means. That it doesn't mean when they're doing ratzon Hashem means when they're doing mitzvahs, and when they're not doing ratzon Hashem means when doing averus, is because if that's the case, the Gemara, same Gemara, the different Gemara says in the same way that the parsha of Vahaya im Shamoa Tishmu is Ein Osim Ritzon Loshel Makom. You're not doing ratzon Hashem. But that's impossible. It says Vahaya im Shamoa Tishmu al Mitzvosat. Right, you are doing ratzon Hashem. The answer is no. You're doing mitzvah Hashem, but you're not doing ratzon Hashem. So that parsha is where you're doing God's will. You're doing mitzvahs, but you're not doing it as God's will. You're doing it as God's command, and then you're called avadim. Otherwise, you're called banim. Okay. Now let's go to Reuven. How did Reuven relate to his parents? As an eved, as a person who did what he's told to do. But if he's not told what he's told to do, not interested in doing more than that, especially where it conflicts with his better interests. Okay. Now let's see Reuven with the Dudayim. How did he function? So like I told you, the Dudayim had a root that was a fertility drug. Now Reuven knew that his mother had just stopped having children. She had five, and she stopped, and she wanted more, to the point where she gave her shifcha to Yaakov, hoping that maybe that would give the induce her to have more children. At least she'd be a surrogate kind of mother through the children of her shifcha. So she wanted very much to have more. So Reuven brought his mother this fertility drug. He wasn't asked to do it. He did it because he wanted to make his mother happy. Now, thinking about it, Reuven shouldn't have done that because it wasn't in his best interest. It says that Canaan, right, Ham's son, named Noah, so he shouldn't have any more children. Why? Because he said, you know, splitting up the Arusha three ways is enough. We have another kid in the family, you have to split up the Arusha four ways. I'm not interested. So make sure Noah doesn't have any more children. That's what he did to Noah, and that's why he was cursed. It is not in a child's interest for his parents to have more children, right? Especially if he has a lot of children or whatever, right? Because you split up the Yerusha, well, amongst other things, split up the parents' time and concern or whatever, money in the family or whatever. The one who has most to lose if there's more kids is the Bechor, because he loses a double portion for every new kid. Doubly he loses. If anybody should not have brought his mother a fertility drug, it was Reuven. She didn't ask him to do it. It was against his better interests. So why did he do it? Because he was a good son. And he wanted to make his mother happy, even if it was against his own personal interests. HaDudayim, that's Reuven who brought the Dudayim. But Nosnu Reyach, it had a spin-off. It gave off an aroma to another case that Reuven did. Reuven tried to save Yosef. Again, why? If anything, Reuven had the most to lose by Yosef, according to what they thought. They thought that Yosef was trying to take away everything from them and get them pushed out of the graces of Yaakov, that he would curse them, and they would be not part of the Jewish people, and he would take over. Just like happened with Yishmael and Yitzchak, right? Where Yishmael was thrown out, and Yitzchak was the only heir that would build the Jewish people. Same thing with Yaakov and Esav. Esav was thrown out, and Yaakov was the only one. Now there's 12 kids, so they look and they thought they're going to build this together. And Yosef seems to try hogging everything. Right? He seems to be wanting rule over them. He's going and telling the father all these crazy stories about them. Why did they come to the conclusion? This guy is trying to get us out and have Yaakov curse us, push us out, and take over. So they looked at him as a rodef. This guy is really dangerous. At that point, who had the most to lose, right, was Reuven. Because he was supposed to be the Bechor, supposed to be the Melech, and supposed to be the Kohen. All three things. He eventually lost it because of the sin that he committed with Bilhah. But whatever that was. Right? And that only became evident later on when Yaakov gave him the bracha and said, Pachas Kamayim Al Toser, you were supposed to be the Kohen, the Bechor, and the Melech, and you lost it all. But he didn't know that until before Yaakov died. At that point, Reuven assumed that he's going to be the Melech, he's going to be the Bechor, and he's going to be the Kohen. And if Yosef is usurping what's rightfully theirs, he's usurping all these things from him. So if anybody had a right to sit back, he wasn't there when they sold him. So he could have just sat back, kept quiet, let them do these terrible things to Yosef, kill him, whatever, and just keep quiet, and he'll benefit. Why did he speak up? To try to save Yosef. Same reason that he brought his mother, the Dudoy. Even though it's against his own personal interest, but how is it going to affect my father? How's my father going to feel if Yosef's killed? Right? It's going to affect him terribly. So his filial devotion to his father, right, overweighed his own personal self-interest. He wanted to make his father happy. So for that reason, he tried to save Yosef. For the same exact reason that he brought the Dudoyim to his mother. So these two incidences, HaDudoyim Nosnu Reach, the case of the Dudoyim gave out an aroma to another case where Reuven functioned the same way in both cases. One, because of his devotion to his mother against his better interest, and devotion to his father against his better interest. That was Reuven, who exhibited a relationship with his father and mother, not like a slave, you do what you're told, but like a real child that does what makes the parents happy. That's Ner Chanukah. What's Ner Chanukah? They say that why were the Jews of that generation fit to have the Xerus of Yavan against them? So it says because they didn't approach Avodah Hashem properly. Right? They looked at Avoda as an Avoda, as a service to a slave to a master. And therefore they had a very external, cold relationship with mitzvahs. Even if they kept the mitzvahs. But they kept them as a bunch of commands. Not something they really wanted to do. Not something they did because they're a Bona Shalom, they want to make God happy and do his ratzon, just because we're commanded, so we do it. So they saw the Torah as external commands. And then they were influenced and dazzled by the externals of Greece. If the Torah is just an external thing, do this and do that, then the externals of Greece are much more impressive. Might and beauty and power, right? That's much more impressive than the externals of Torah. Torah externals are not so impressive. On the other hand, if they had approached the Torah as an inner Ratzon Hashem, then the inner values of Torah, the lifestyle of Torah, the being God's children, right, then the Greek culture couldn't hold a candle to that beauty, excuse the pun. So that is what's it called, the difference. The Jews of the time, many of them, approached Yiddishkeit as slaves to a master. And if that's what Yiddishkeit is, it's not very impressive. And the Greek culture was much more impressive. So they became Hellenists. What was the tikkun? The Chashmonaim. The Chashmonaim, had they just functioned as slaves to a master, then they wouldn't have never made an uprising. They would have said, look, the Greeks made gzeiros against us. So does halachas. The halacha is you try to do the mitzvahs in private. If you can't, it's a shas hashmad, and you have to give your life. So fine. If the goyim come and they catch us, and the question is not doing the mitzvah, or doing an aveira, and or living, we'll have to give up our life. But we don't have to do mitzvahs. Dafka, right? We can stop doing mitzvahs, and even a shas hashmad, you don't have to give your life for not doing a mitzvah, not putting on tefillin, not doing something. You don't have to do the mitzvah and get killed. You just can't do something wrong and save your life. So if they'll come and they'll tell us to be mechal Shabbos or eat charfis, we'll have to give up our life. Hopefully they won't catch us, right? And they won't come and force us. And we won't do any mitzvahs per se, because this way we'll be able to save our lives. They could have done that without making any uprising, if they were just keeping the Torah as a bunch of commands. That's the halacha. That's the commands. So why did they make an uprising? And why did they risk their lives and go out and fight in order to be able to keep mitzvahs? Because they didn't relate to the Ribbono Shel Olam as a master and just do what you have to do. They did beyond that. And they wanted to relate to the Ribbono Shel Olam as children. And the children fight for the kavod of the father. They don't just do what they have to do. They go beyond what they have to do because they wanted to have that relationship with Hashem and keep mitzvahs. So they fought. And they won. It says that in the Al HaNisim. The Achar came, bo bonecha lidvir beisecha. They came as children to the Ribbono Shel Olam, not as slaves. That was what Hanukkah produced. And that's why the Pnei Yeshua says there was no need for a mitzvah. There was no need for a miracle. Because you're allowed to use tamei oil if most of the people are tamei. So there's no need for a miracle. So why did God make a miracle and let them light with pure oil? And even if they couldn't light, if you don't have oil, you don't light. But since they went out of their way to make God happy, not just to do what you have to do, the Ribbono Shel Olam went out of his way to make a miracle that wasn't necessary to show how precious they were as children. They showed God's precious to them as a father, and God showed that they're precious to him as children. And he made a miracle, wasn't necessary, but just to show how precious they are. Because they showed how precious he was by going out and fighting. So that was the whole idea of Hanukkah. Comes out, the whole basis of Hanukkah is this relationship as a child to a parent and not a slave to a master. That's what Hanukkah is all about. That's exactly what Hadudoyim Nosn Rea. Just like Reuven showed in two instances that he functioned as a child and not as a slave to his parent, right? Like the Mesil Shasharim says, that's Chassidus. So too, Ner Chanukah was the same idea, that we functioned as a child to the Ribbono Shel Olam, not as a slave. That's the connection. So that's Hadudoyim Nosn Rea. From this concept of the Dudoyim, which showed Reuven's relationship to his mother, and Nosnu Reach, it gave out a nice smell that influenced Reuven to show his relationship to his father by saving Yosef. That's what the Chashmonaim followed in their relationship to Hashem, to be children, not slaves, and to be Moser Nefesh, to fight for Torah and mitzvahs when they didn't have to. So the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us a mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, which he didn't have to show his relationship with us that was reciprocal. Yeah.
I've got two questions, though. One with Reuven and one with what the Rabbi said. Okay.
They better not be good questions, because...
In the Mesilas Yesharim, the Rabbi said before, I mean, that the level of Hasidus is something basically beyond us. None of us, we're not close, I mean, in the world today. So if that's the case, I mean, these Hashmonaim, they attain that level. So what hope is there for us today? I mean, if we just like, the best we can do is serve Hashem with mitzvahs and not in any way have any aspiration, that how do we survive it? And what's going to be? I mean, it's not, we need, how are we going to get to that level of Hasidus, which seems essential?
Right. So we said even then, what's very difficult for us to leave, I can't say that it's impossible, because there are probably people in this world that can reach that level, just seems to me beyond. Okay. That, and I would imagine that the people I know have a similar problem, even though it could be not like that. It could be it's only my problem. But that's what it seems to me. But I said also, even though maybe we can't reach that in its totality, in its perfection, but at least at times we can reach it. And if we get everybody together, so I can reach it in one way, with one kind of mitzvah, where I don't do it just because I have to, but and you can do it with a different mitzvah, because you're different than me, and you have different likes and dislikes, and things that speak to you, and different things speak to me. And everybody here has different mitzvahs that they excel in, that somebody else is, you know, and that mitzvah they do as Ratzon Hashem. So if we take everybody in this room, we'll probably find a lot of mitzvahs that everybody has one thing or two things that they can do really as chassidus, and the other things as that. And if we put them all together, we have a lot of mitzvahs that as a group we can do. Now if you take the whole moshav, that's even a bigger group. You take the whole Chevel Modi'in, that's a bigger group. Take the whole Eretz Yisrael, all of Klal Yisrael, so you have amongst all of us Klal Yisrael doing mitzvahs as chassidus, right, as a collective body, even though no individual is going to reach it with everything. So that's also a hope. So even if we do it with one, or even sometimes, it helps, because put everybody together, although sometimes becomes every time.
The second question is, the Shvatim, they convene the base then. To put with regard to your side. Now you need everybody to agree in order to.
No, you know, you just need a majority.
So everyone couldn't have protested at that base then.
No, he did.
Why didn't he?
You need a majority.
Just a majority.
But they didn't. Right, but they didn't make the what's it called the vote when Reuven was there. Mm-hmm. Reuven did what's it called? I have a whole nice piece of Torah on this. Cute thing, but it's not for now. But let's figure out. Rashi says that Yosef championed the cause of the Bnei Hashvachos. There were four of them. Binyamin wasn't there, and Yosef wasn't part of the Beis Din. So that means there are only 10 brothers. Okay? Now, Reuven wasn't part of it. Yeah? So it was 5 against 4. Because Leah, right, had 6 children. Yeah? And Reuven wasn't there. Well, Reuven was not part of that Beis Din. He went away before they sat as a Beis Din. Well, he was there, but he didn't agree. So there should have been 5 against 5, yeah? If it was 10.
No, Reuven wasn't there.
What?
Reuven wasn't there.
If Reuven wasn't there, it was only 9.
And Yosef and Binyamin weren't there.
And Yosef and Binyamin weren't there. So it was 5 against 4.
5 against 4.
So they had a majority.
That was enough.
Right. That Bechorah was enough. It wasn't really enough. Because in order to convict somebody in a capital case, you need a majority of 2. You don't need everybody, but you need a majority of 2. So that's later what Yehuda said, Ma betze. You can only have a majority of 1 if it's a benefit to one side. In other words, in a Beis Din of 3, if 2 say he has to pay and 1 says not, he pays. It's only a majority of 1, right? 2 against 1. Still, because there, if you go only after a simple majority for good, not for bad. So Tosa says, yeah, but it's bad for the other guy who has to pay, right? But it's good for the guy who's getting the money. So it's bad for this one, good for this one, that's good. But in a capital case, it's bad for the guy who's getting killed. Tosa says, yeah, but it's good for the family who gets satisfaction that the murderer's getting killed. He said, that kind of satisfaction doesn't count. You need a monetary benefit. So that's what Reuven said. Ma betza. Where is there a monetary benefit that we can kill him with a majority of 1? If there be a monetary benefit, then maybe. But here there's no monetary benefit. So you need a majority of 2. We don't have a majority of 2. So then we'll sell him. If we sell him, we'll get money. And then there'll be a benefit to us money-wise. And bad for him, but good for us. And you can use a majority of 1.
So it wasn't because they had a change of heart in any way. No,
according to me, no. It was a different thing. But according to the simple meaning, right, they decided they're going to be merciful. Really, we could kill him. But we can accomplish the same thing by getting him out of the scene. So we'll do that and not kill him.
They weren't really going according to rules of a Beis Din anyways.
Yeah, okay, but these kind of Divrei Torah or right. But they went in the Maisa, that's the way they look at it, right? That it was.
It just feels very hard to understand.
And they didn't have 23 judges either, yeah, right? But the concept is there, right?
It's just so hard to understand that their feelings, just like what the Rav said about Reuven, that their feelings for what their father, I mean, it destroyed him. I mean, he was without the Shekhinah one, that they didn't. The sensitivity of such a factor.
That yeah, that's that later on when Yosef gives him Musar at the end. He says, Ani Yosef Ha'odo Vichai, the Beis Halevi says, I'm Yosef, remember me? Right, you're so concerned about our father now with Binyamin, why aren't you concerned about him then? That's so, what your time is what Yosef said to them later. Okay, let's learn some halachas of Shemitah.